Sean, Nashville's fired up. We've been here for a little bit now, and this place is fired up. And we are here in Nashville. NHL Awards tonight, NHL Draft Wednesday and Thursday. It's definitely, as always here in Nashville, there's a vibe.
It's hot, Nashville. It's hot. Literally and figuratively. It's hot figuratively, and it's 100 degrees with 100% humidity. So I can't wait to get into Bridgestone Arena for the awards tonight and for the draft on Wednesday and Thursday, because it might be one of the only cool places in the whole city.
Yeah, you may be correct, although we are in air conditioning right now as we record this. And listen, hey, we touched it. You said it. The NHL Awards are tonight. We're recording this Monday. We're going to have Adam Kimmelman, NHL Draft Class Podcast, our guru, one of our gurus on the NHL draft. He's going to be joining us shortly. We're going to do a deep dive into the draft. Obviously, we know about Connor Bedard, but there's so much more to know about this draft. And is it the best draft that we've seen maybe ever? We'll ask that question to Adam Kimmelman. But Sean, right before we started recording this podcast, we got news. And in a way, it kind of kicks off what could be a crazy week, although you could say that the Predators and the Avalanche did that on Saturday with Ryan Johansson going from here in Nashville to Colorado. But Taylor Hall and Nick Foligno, at least the rights to Nick Foligno, because he's a pending unrestricted free agent, they're going from Boston to the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for Ian Mitchell and Alec Regula. But this is a trade where Boston is looking to shed cap, $6 million for Taylor Hall. And the Blackhawks need a guy that Connor Bedard can pass the puck to and can pass the puck back to Connor Bedard, and that's Taylor Hall.
Yeah, this is just the beginning. You know, it was funny. Yesterday, Sunday, was the awards availability, and they had everybody out for that. And Montgomery, the coach of the Bruins, was talking about how he would love to run it back with the Bruins because he thought they would be better prepared next year for the playoffs, but he knew that wasn't a reality. He didn't know what surgery was going to happen, but he knew that Cam Neely and Sweeney were going to do surgery, and it's begun, right? He would have loved to have Taylor Hall back, but it's not going to happen. Chicago's going to be a player this week for sure with the cap space they have. They're going to take on assets to try and free up money for other teams that want to be aggressive. But you're right. It started on Saturday when Barry Trotz, in his first move as the new Nashville GM, moved the franchise icon and, you know, is resetting what's going to happen in Nashville, trying to free up some cap space so they can retool as they go along, especially with the draft capital they have in the draft later this week. So it's only the beginning.
It really is. And I think the reset, that word, I think, is it fits here for both of these moves, to be honest with you. Like you said, with Nashville, they're resetting it around guys like Roman Josi, Juuse Saros, Philip Forsberg. And to have Ryan Johansson at $8 million per for the next two seasons when you want to reset it doesn't make sense. They're paying Ryan Johansson $4 million because they're eating half the cap to not play for them, in fact, to play against them in the same division. But what it does is it opens up. That cap space is so valuable, especially in a flat cap world. So they opened up $4 million. That's how they view it, to continue to try to reset it around. And for the Colorado Avalanche, we both talked to Cale Makar on Sunday at NHL Awards, and Cale Makar was saying that depth was a killer for them. This is a first of a domino move, right? I mean, they're getting Ryan Johansson, and that's a nice addition. But what now? Because JT Compher is a free agent. There's a few other things. So if you add Johansson and you don't re-sign Compher, it's kind of a one-for-one in a way. Maybe Johansson's a little bit of a better player, but it's a reset, no question about it, for the Nashville Predators, and Boston has to reset it too. We don't know about the futures of Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. Both of those guys had low salaries last year. They hit all their bonuses. That bonus money is coming onto the cap this coming season. They're going to have to deal with that. They need some extra space. Taylor Hall is an expendable guy. They're resetting it around what we know. But the key thing with Boston is what we don't know. And that's going to determine, I think, a lot of what their offseason is about. I mean, we know the Taylor Hall trade now, but what's up with Bergeron and Krejci? That's going to determine a lot of it.
And nobody knows. We spent all day Sunday, you know, trying to glean what was going to happen with each of those players. And you don't know how deep the surgery is going to be either. Like, how deep into that roster do they have to go? Look, Providence, their AHL affiliate, was a good team this year. There's some prospects down there, but not a ton. You know, they're in the same place that Colorado is in that they've moved a lot of assets to be good, to compete on a yearly basis. And I, you know, again, I thought it was really interesting. Cale Makar, you know, was like, this is about depth for us because depth killed us last year. We thought we were a good team, and we didn't have the depth in game late in the season, and we certainly didn't have the depth in the playoffs to handle playoff hockey. This makes them a little bit deeper of a team, settles their lines a little bit. And the other thing that Cale said, and I thought was really interesting, was Ryan Johansson is a hard player to play against, and everybody wants that. You look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and what was the defining characteristic of their top six forwards? They were hard.
Yeah.
Right. And so here's another guy that plays a hard game. So, again, like we've said, you know, these things have already happened. All the GMs are here together. Talk is going to start in earnest. Teams are going to get creative and we're going to benefit from it. We're going to have a lot to talk about.
There is. And look, I mean, we haven't even touched on it. What are the Winnipeg Jets going to do? Right. I mean, with Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Connor Hellebuck, all guys entering the last years of their contract, they're looking at a reset, a retool, or potentially a rebuild. Do they trade all those guys? Do they trade some of those guys? Do they trade none of those guys? Calgary is another team, right? What are they going to do? There's a lot of unknowns right now. I think the known with those particular teams and some teams around the league is they're going to be active. They're going to be doing something. And the real known is, you know, the fact that Connor Bedard is going to be the number one pick on Wednesday night. He's going to go to the Chicago Blackhawks, and they're going to try to build around him. But there's so much more to that draft, Sean. So let's stop talking here, and let's bring in Adam Kimmelman. We talked to Adam. He's from NHL Draft Class Podcast, does a lot of the draft stuff for us at NHL.com, along with Mike Morial. We talked all about the draft and what's to come here on Wednesday night and Thursday in Nashville.
Before we get to Adam, though, you have inside information? You've been accused of this before, Dan. How do you know he's going to go at number one?
Well, I have been accused of this before, but I'm going to make the assumption. I think it's a very good assumption. How about that? Adam's going to tell us, though. So here's that interview with Adam Kimmelman. Adam, welcome to the NHL At The Rink podcast. You do your own podcast, Draft Class. You guys do a terrific job there. Is Connor Bedard going to go number one?
I believe it's safe to assume that he will go number one. Yes, I feel very confident. We had that in our mock draft on NHL.com if you want to look at that. But it's funny, you know, we had Mike Dunahy on, the Blackhawks amateur scouting director, while we were up at the scouting combine. And we did. We knew he wouldn't give us the answer. But we asked him, you know, so you guys are all set. You're going to take Bedard number one. And he just kind of laughed. He goes, we're still doing work. We don't have any decisions to make. I kind of have the feeling the decision was made about 2 seconds after Bill Daly flipped that card on May 8th when they won the lottery.
I don't know. I think they're calling all the GMs here and trying to see if they can get the Herschel Walker deal going. All their draft picks for the number one.
Well, I think you absolutely, I mean, you lose nothing by making those calls, but I think it's more for entertainment purposes. I don't imagine anything being able to move Chicago off that number one pick.
It's not worth the charge on your phone to make those, like, the battery charging on your phone. It's not worth it because everybody has been saying this. In fact, I spoke with some Cale Makar and Adam Fox just on Sunday at NHL Media, at the NHL Media Day for the awards. And Cale Makar, he said he skated with Connor Bedard last year. He said his shot is incredible. And, you know, Adam Fox thinks he's going to be an 80-point player. Maybe.
I don't know if I'd go right that far. I mean, maybe, you know, if the Blackhawks put the right pieces in place around him, and it looks like they've already started to do that. But, you know, 80 points is a bit much. Yeah. I think 60 points is a really fair level for Connor Bedard. I mean, if he eclipses it, that's great. But you got to remember, there's not a lot around him in Chicago. So he needs some help.
Yeah, and that seems to be the consensus. We asked everybody about Connor Bedard yesterday at the availability and what his ceiling was. And it was the 60 to 80 point range for most people that would offer. You always got the, oh, I don't know his game. I can't really. Yeah, we all know his game, like even if we haven't seen him.
They've all seen him.
It seems to be a 60 to 80 point range. And this is a hard league to score in now, like to score points in, unless you're Connor McDavid, the other Connor.
Right.
But for a rookie, even with talent around him, it's hard to score points.
And you're not coming in. This isn't like the second coming of Eric Lindros coming in where he's 6'4" and 240 pounds and he's going to bulldoze his way through teams. You know, he's 5'10", he's 180 pounds. Maybe he'll probably, you know, figure he puts on maybe another 5 or 6 pounds during the summer whenever he has time to get in the gym. But this is a guy who's going to have to get by on his skills and his smarts, and he's going to need help from guys around him because he's not going to be able to just bowl through guys, and the opportunities, the game's going to be much faster at the NHL level than what he's used to. We got some of that at the World Juniors, you know, because you're playing against guys that are older, that have been to NHL training camps, that have been a little bit in that experience. You're not playing against, you know, 16-year-old kids from Swift Current.
Yeah. But again, we all know he's going to go number one, and yes, he's going to have to deal with all that. And it seems like your mock draft that you did with Mike Morial, you each had the same top four. It was Bedard, Fantilli to Anaheim, mm-hmm, Leo Carlson to Columbus, and then Will Smith to San Jose. If all those teams keep those picks. Now, Barry Trotz was saying today, Nashville's GM was saying, now the new Nashville GM was saying, he's trying to trade into the top four. I don't know if any of those teams are going to trade out of the top four, but assuming those four stand and you guys had them the same,
right,
it started to vary at five. Is that where this draft really begins
for me? Yeah, because I think Montreal is sort of the wild card there, because I think that could be the landing spot for Matvei Michkov, because I think he fits in what their timeline is for them to be a playoff team, you know, where you've seen already what they've got in place with Caulfield and Suzuki and Slavkovsky, last year's number one. They've started to build this core. And 3 years from now, because that's the soonest you'll be able to put Michkov in your lineup, 3 years from now, they'll be a playoff team, or at least battling, maybe even battling for a top three spot in the division. So then you sort of parachute a superstar in at 22 on an entry-level contract. From a raw skill perspective, he's closer to Bedard than anybody else in this year's draft class. But there's obviously other things that go into the equation. So to me, from a timeline perspective, from a patience perspective, I think Montreal is the spot for Michkov. Now, Mike thinks it's going to be David Reinbacher, the defenseman, Austrian-born, who plays in Switzerland, you know, because that's another need for Montreal, and maybe they're not willing to pull the trigger because you're going to have to wait three very long years minimum to get Michkov in your lineup. So he is really the wild card of the draft, and I think those discussions really start at number five.
But it's a situation where he could slide much, much deeper. Teams are afraid of him and what he wants to do.
Right. I think, you know, Mike Morial spoke to an interpreter who spoke to Michkov through an interpreter, and the response was, I want to play in the NHL. When that happens, you know, is unclear, because the soonest it can be is the 25-26 season. I'm sorry, the 26-27 season. So you have to wait at least that long, not to mention maybe he signs an extension. You know, that's what Kaprizov did, and it was 5 years from when he was drafted till when he came to the NHL. Not every GM is going to be willing to say, I have enough belief in what I'm building that I'm willing to wait. Because in Minnesota, it was three GMs before they got to reap the benefits of taking Kirill Kaprizov. So Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon, are they secure enough in their job and what they've built that 3, 4, 5 years from now, they'll still be in those roles and be able to reap the benefits of Matvei Michkov?
It's interesting, right? Because when you think of those teams, 5, 6, Montreal, Arizona at 6, Philadelphia at 7, if you want to ask me about who can be patient, to me, it wouldn't be Montreal. Like, you know, like it, that, to me, that market will be patient only for so long. Whereas Arizona's willing to be patient. We know that, and they're willing to play it out. So I wonder if it's not Montreal, does Arizona then take that flyer on this guy, understanding that, okay, he's not going to play here for a while, but we kind of don't need him for a while either.
Well, what also helps in the Arizona case is they also have number 12. And in a very deep draft, you can maybe take a big swing at 6. Maybe you connect, maybe you don't, because you know you're still going to get a really good player at 12, and there are going to be a lot of really good players available for Arizona at number 12. And you could say the same about Philadelphia with 7 and 22. I think they're still going to get a really good player at 22, not probably to the caliber that Arizona is going to get at 12. So if you look at teams that are willing to take big swings, look at the teams that have multiple first-round picks.
How deep is this draft? You said somebody's going to get a good player at 22. How deep do we go in this draft before it becomes a crapshoot?
Well, so our mock draft was 32. I probably had 40 to 45 names I could have put in that top 32. So it's really deep. You're going to see guys that go late in the second round that we're going to be talking about 5 years from now that are really outstanding NHL players, forwards, defense, and goalie.
What's the comparable then to this draft? Is it the best draft in 20 years, the 2003 draft that everybody talks about, or is it better than that?
I think it could be as good as the 2015 draft with McDavid and Eichel and those guys. I think it's the best we've seen in quite some time. You know, and I hesitate to always answer that. How deep is this draft? I always say, ask me in 5 years, and I'll tell you how good this draft was. But I think if the players that we're going to see, especially the ones that go early, stay on the developmental curve that we've already seen them at 17, 18, we're talking multiple foundational players, guys who were top six, top line forwards, top pair defensemen, all-star level players.
Who's your guy in this draft? Who's the guy? You've covered him all year, World Juniors, scouting combine, phone interviews, the whole thing. Who's the guy that you love in this draft? And when he gets picked, that team, you're going to be like, they get it.
The guy that really opened up my eyes when I was at the combine was Tom Molander, the Swedish defenseman with Rögle. He's a guy that if you just watch him, you might not really appreciate all of his game. He's not a guy who's going to go end to end with the puck, but he's going to do everything really well. He's got a really nice competitive edge to his game. He's got the size that you look for at 6'1" and 190-something pounds. He's nasty when he needs to be. I talked to his GM out in Rögle, and they would have put him in their lineup, but he's dead set on playing at Boston College in the fall, Boston University in the fall. So he's coming over, and when I asked him about it, it was really one of the most intelligent answers I've ever heard from any 18-year-old prospect. He said, look, these teams in Sweden, they're professional teams. They want to win. That's what they care about. Development is second. I need time to develop my game. I understand that. So I don't want to go play in the Swedish Hockey League, and I'm only going to get 8 minutes a night. And I might have to bounce down between Allsvenskan, the second division, or back to the junior league. I want to play. And he's going to go to BU, and he's probably going to play 25, 26 minutes a night in a really top-level D1 program. And he's going to get all the benefits from going to college hockey, games on the weekends, Monday through Thursday in the gym, working on his skills. So he's a guy that really impressed me off the ice, just getting to meet him, getting to know him, getting to talk to him. And then you watch him on the ice and the skill set. I think David Reinbacher is the Austrian-born player from Switzerland. He's played in Kloten in the Swiss League. I think he's the number one defenseman. I think it'll either be Willander or Axel Sandin Palicka, the other Swedish defenseman, that it's going to be the second defenseman off the board.
Well, that's a really mature answer.
It
really is a mature answer. And it's actually surprising to me that more players don't think along those lines. They think about the higher level of competition, and maybe the Swedish Hockey League is a higher level of competition than Hockey East or NCAA hockey. But at the same time, what does it matter if you're only playing 7 or 8 minutes versus what you could be playing? Like you said, 25 minutes.
The only other guy I could compare it to was Gabriel Landeskog, who did the same thing. Yep. 2 years, his draft minus one, left Sweden to go play in Kitchener. And I asked him the same question. And I remember asking him that question back then, and he gave almost the same answer. You know, I need to develop my game. I'm not going to get the ice time that I need if I stay and play. I forget which Swedish team he was with, but I'm not going to get the ice time I need if I stay there. If I come to Kitchener, they told me I'm going to play top line. They told me I'm going to play power play. I'm going to play penalty kill. And we all know the career he had. So I asked Willander if he's spoken to Landeskog, and he's like, well, you know, I know he's busy right now with the surgery and the medical issues he's got, but it's absolutely something I looked into, and I understand, I know his path, and that's why sort of educated me on mine. So it was really impressive to have that sort of vision.
And it's a testament to what college hockey's become. Mm-hmm. For draft purposes and everything else. Everybody knows about college hockey now, even the Europeans. There's so many more Europeans playing it, and it's become more of a draft path than it has in the past, and I think we'll see that again in this draft.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're seeing that whole U.S. national team line is going to the Boston College together, Ryan Leonard, Will Smith, and Gabe Perreault. You know, Oliver Moore is going to the University of Minnesota, and the U.S. national team guys, you see the development that they get from going from that national team program, which has the best training in the world, as good as some NHL teams, to the college environment. And as you said, college hockey's getting better and better and better. And you look at some of these programs, you know, Michigan, Minnesota Duluth, BC, BU, you know, Wisconsin, I think, is going to take a big step forward with what they're doing, with the changes that they've made. So it really is. It's a great pathway for a guy who maybe thinks he needs a little bit more physical development, a smaller size guy, because you get that extra skill time, you get that extra gym time.
Right. All right. So we can't have you on and not ask you about the Philadelphia Flyers, right? So you also cover a lot of Flyer stuff for us at NHL.com too. And like you said, they pick 7, they pick 22. Are they going to add? I mean, they could potentially add another first-round pick with the moves that they're looking to make too, right?
Well, we asked Danny Briere this, and he said absolutely. He would love to add another first-round pick, maybe another, maybe more, but it takes 2 dance parties. So right now they're working under the assumption that it's going to be 7 and 22, but he's absolutely working the phones. You know, the rumors that we all saw online, you know, whatever veracity they have, he said they are looking to add because they understand what they have and where they are and what they need, and they need a lot. They need a lot of the goal is to make them a more skilled, younger, more athletic group than what they've been in the past. And the way you do that is through the draft. And that's why they're looking at the players that they're looking at. And that's why they want to be able, in a very deep draft, to have as many swings high up as they can. Also because they don't have a second round pick this year. That went to Carolina in the Tony DeAngelo trade last year at the draft.
I thought it was vengeance now. They're bringing back the Flyer culture with all the hires they made in player development.
It's interesting. It feels like, you know, it used to be the old saying, you know, growing up down there, it's like if you played for the Flyers, that was really the only job qualification that you needed to then work for the Flyers. And then that sort of went away a little bit as Bobby Clarke and Paul Holmgren and Bill Barber sort of, you know, reached their retirement age, so to speak. You know, now you're seeing it come back with Keith Jones, with Danny Briere, Patrick Sharp, John LeClair. It's, you know, it's gone from the guys that, you know, your parents watched growing up to now it's guys that I covered. Because I covered Patrick Sharp when he was a rookie in Philadelphia. I covered John LeClair his last couple of years in Philadelphia. So it's funny now to see all those guys coming back in this role.
You covered Kevin Hayes in Philadelphia. You've covered Travis Konecny in Philadelphia, Scott Laughton in Philadelphia. Do you think you'll be covering those guys in Philadelphia this coming season?
Of the 3 guys you mentioned, the least likely, I think, is going to be Kevin Hayes. You know, it's unfortunate. You talk about a guy who really adopted a city. He really, like, some guys say, yeah, I like living here. I like the city. I mean, I like the team I'm with. Kevin Hayes really, really loves living in Philadelphia. He's made himself a real part of the community where he lives through some of his social activity. You know, he loves it. But there were clashes last year with John Tortorella. I mean, I'm not speaking out of turn. You know, he's been scratched. He was moved from center to the wing. He was dropped in the lineup. His ice time plummeted, especially the second half of the season. So, you know, Kevin Hayes has 3 years at $7.1 million left on his contract. You look at where the Flyers are in their rebuilding process. A $7.1 million a year center who's 31, who maybe doesn't have the best relationship with the coach, who seems embedded with his group, it seems like something's got to have to change somewhere. Scott Laughton, I think they would love to keep because Scott loves it in Philadelphia. He wants to be part of turning this thing around. But again, if a team's going to give you a first-round draft pick for Scott Laughton, you have to really consider it. And Travis Konecny, same thing. I don't think there's an appetite to trade Travis Konecny. They see him as a 35-goal guy for multiple seasons moving forward. But if a team comes in and blows their doors off, they have to look at it. Danny Briere said multiple times, everything's on the table. There is nobody on our we-will-not-trade list. We'll listen on anybody.
Including Carter Hart, the one-time franchise goalie.
Well, again, I think Carter Hart is in the stage now where I compare him to John Gibson with the Ducks, right? John Gibson hit his prime right as Anaheim sort of took this dip in the standings where they're way out of the playoffs. And now you can kind of see they're going to start adding some of these young prospects that are coming in. You know, they're going to get the number 2 pick in the draft. They've added McTavish. They've added Zegras. They have the best defenseman in the Western League, the Quebec League, and the Ontario League this season. So some of those guys are going to come in. Well, now John Gibson, when he was at his peak, they were down in the standings. Now that he's sort of got more games behind him than ahead of him, you've almost wasted the asset when you didn't move him maybe when you could have. So I don't know if the Flyers want to get in that situation with Carter Hart.
I want to get to sleepers with you, too, for this draft. But you mentioned, like, Adam Fantilli. Mm-hmm. We think he's going to go number 2.
Yes.
To Anaheim. How close is he to Bedard? Like, is Bedard that much further ahead than Fantilli in terms of what they project to be? What are the Ducks getting here? Like, by not winning the lottery, how much of a hit is that for them?
If Connor Bedard wasn't in this draft, Adam Fantilli would be the absolute number one pick. That's how good he is. I think he's a guy, and we talked about college hockey before. You do not see, very rarely do you see an 18-year-old true freshman walk into the NCAA team, take over a team, first-line center, lead the nation in points, tie for the national lead in goals, win the Hobey Baker, carry your team to the national semifinal, the Frozen Four semifinals. Then he goes to World Juniors, moves out of the center number one center position, takes a bottom-line wing role, embraces it, helps Canada win the gold at the World Juniors. Then he does it at the World Championship, playing around the NHL guys. You are getting the potential, an elite, foundational number one center. And the one thing he does have that Bedard does not is 6'2" and probably 200 pounds when next season starts. Now, I don't think he's in the Anaheim lineup next season. I think he's got one more season left in Michigan that he's going to do. But 2 years from now, I think the Ducks are going to get a really, really good player, a guy who can step in and be a number one or number two center right off the hop.
So Dan brought it up. Who's your biggest sleeper in this draft?
The guy I'm really curious about is Danny Nelson from the U.S. National Team program. Talked to Pat Cullen from Central Scouting. And so on that stack team, it's really easy to get lost if you are not the elite of the elite, the Will Smiths, the Ryan Leonards. So Danny Nelson was their third-line center. Up until he got to the National Team program, he was a defenseman. So there are teams that are wondering, could he be a 6'4", 212-pound center? Or is he a left shot defenseman who can play on our top defense pair? Because he's physical, he's strong, he's athletic, he skates really well, he's raw at both positions. He wants to be a forward. He's going to go to Notre Dame in the fall. He wants to play center. He's going to play center. But I compare it to years ago, I guess the 2008 draft. The Anaheim Ducks had the 18th pick. They wanted Jake Gardner, and Jake Gardner was a defenseman coming out of high school, but he had been a forward all through his development years. And I talked to Brian Burke about this. He said, we love the player because we know he's athletic. We want him as a defenseman, but we know he can play forward if defenseman doesn't work. We're just going to take the player and let development take its course. Jake Gardner went on to have a really nice NHL career. I think Danny Nelson is a guy that the same questions are there. Teams like the talent, teams like the skill set, the size, the athleticism, and they'll let whatever happens with the development set its course. So he's going to be a really interesting guy. He could go, you know, anywhere between 25 and 50. That's the spread on him.
That's why we bring Adam on, because there's no way I would have been able to give that answer. There's no way you would have been able to give that answer either, Sean.
No way.
No shot. All
well,
right.
That's what 12 months of covering this does for you.
That's
you
true.
Learn a few things.
That's true. All right, last one from me. I'm going to tell you right off the bat. We're going to talk about 60 diamonds. I'm going to tell you right now, I hate you. Okay.
Yes. All right. I think he does too.
All right.
You're not the only one.
So the 60 Diamonds Project, it started out asking several of us that you know, colleagues to rank the top 60 draft picks of all time. It turned into something way bigger than you probably imagined, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was just supposed to be a nice little editorial piece that we on our .com staff could do and rank. You know, it's the 60th anniversary of the first draft in 1963. And I thought, well, who are the best 60 picks of all time? And I didn't realize best could be defined so many, many different ways. And to come up with that definition became a far more painful process for some people than I probably anticipated. And it's funny you said that, you know, you hate me. I know Sean also was not the biggest fan of it, but I will say you guys, you know, you guys were, the three of us were part of the 13-person panel. It was really, it came out really well. And I'm not just saying that because we did the show on NHL Network, which you can watch the 60 Diamonds, the greatest picks of the first 60 NHL drafts, and it was a lot of fun to do that. And I was, you know, I'm the one who saw all the ballots. I'm the one who kind of helped tabulate the list of 60. It was really interesting how it all kind of came up. You know, 182 guys got at least one vote. Only three people appeared on all 13 ballots. So to me, that was fun for me to see that. Maybe not for you guys, but it was fun for me.
Best was never defined. You never define best.
That's correct. That's
so
correct.
So I just want everybody to know that. We haven't published our ballots, but I want everybody to know that best was never defined. So you can't argue with any of our ballots because that was the best that we came up with. Who were the three guys?
The three guys were Patrick Waugh, Mark Messier, and Yari Curry were the only three guys to appear on all 13 ballots. And
Sean is shaking his head. Nobody can see it, but Sean is shaking his head right now.
And there are some more deep dives I can give you on the ballot. Mario Lemieux, who finished number 7 on the list, was number 1 on 9 of the 13 ballots, and he was left off the other 4.
That he was left off my ballot.
And he was number 1 on mine.
And he was number 1 on mine as well. Now, Nick Lidstrom, who was number 1, was number 1 on 4 ballots. And he ended up number 1 overall. That's sort of what I was going for.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I know you didn't like the fact that there were no guardrails or definitions for what best was, but I thought leaving it nebulous would make it more fun. And I thought it was fun. Obviously, others had, you know, less fun than I did.
We could walk outside of where we're drafting, where we're doing this podcast right now, and ask the first person we see who was the best draft pick, who was the best player in the NHL ever. And they'll say drafted player in the NHL.
Right.
And they'll say Mario Lemieux. They could have picked Mario Lemieux. It took nothing away from the Penguins, but it took absolutely no skill to pick Mario Lemieux. There was no other choice. To do anything else would have been foolhardy at best.
Yes, you're correct.
So how can it be the best draft pick ever? It was a no-brainer.
It was the greatest. To me, as much of a no-brainer as it was, you still have to make the decision.
There was no decision to make. They tanked to get him. They threw everything away to get him. They knew they were going to get him from day one. It took absolutely no chutzpah.
I'm having PTSD to this exact conversation we had in April.
I'm gonna take it away from you, and I'm gonna thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Says the other guy who picked Mario Lemieux. Yeah.
Now what you've done here is you've fired up Sean for our close that's coming up here. So I appreciate that, Adam. Thank you so much for jumping on with us and enjoy the draft.
My pleasure.
And the project. My complaints aside about how it was run, turned out brilliantly, and Adam should be congratulated. He turned a summer filler project into a multimedia extravaganza. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I'll remember this come review time.
All right, Sean, are you promptly fired up? Because I think you are.
I'm fired up.
All right.
I can't believe some of the people I work with.
Well, Jesus. You know, I had them. I'm not going to get into it. Forget it. It's not happening. I'm not doing it. We're moving on. Listen. We agree to disagree. We do that a lot here. Yesterday,
that's the beauty of the show.
Listen, it's Monday, Sunday. I spent a lot of time talking to Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson's a big story in the National Hockey League right now, and he was very upfront and honest. Erik Karlsson wants to be traded, and he is not making any, he's not mincing his words about it. He wants out of San Jose, and it has nothing to do with San Jose. In fact, he said, if he were 5 or 6 or 7 years younger, he'd be fully on board, all in with what the San Jose Sharks are doing. He loves what the San Jose Sharks are doing. I talked to David Quinn, too, and he said Karlsson said the exact same thing to him, that if he was just a little younger in his career, he'd be fully on board because he really likes what they're doing and thinks San Jose is going to be a winner again. But it doesn't fit his timeline. Erik Karlsson wants to be traded. He's 33 years old. He's got 4 years left on his deal, but it's an $11.5 million cap charge. Somebody's got to be able to take him on. The Sharks are going to have to eat some of that salary. But, Sean, do you think Karlsson gets moved while we're here? Do you think he gets moved July 1, Saturday, a little after, before training camp? I mean, where do you think this goes?
I don't know that he gets moved. That's a big number. That's a really big number. I don't care how creative San Jose gets and how much they want to eat. It's a huge number. You eat half of that, you're still going to find somebody that can take almost $6 million in a flat cap world.
But, yes, you do. It's not a flat cap world after this coming season. And I think that's something you have to look at here. And you have to look at teams that have the cap space but can project out to, even if they have to sign guys, right? Even if they have to sign a guy to a bigger contract going forward after this coming season, can you handle, let's say the Sharks are willing to eat $4 million of it, right? So it's a $7.5 million deal for Erik Karlsson, right? He's $7.5 million. That's 100. Look, I'm not saying he's going to get 100 points again, but he got 101 points this season. He's still really good, really good, and he's an impact player motivated to win. I haven't seen him like he was, you know, when I talked to him on Sunday about how dedicated he is to winning. He said, this is pretty much what he said. I've played with a lot of guys in my career who played like winners and should have been winners, but were never winners. I don't want to be that guy. That's what he said. And I mean, you could think about the guys, Daniel Alfredson, Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton. There's probably a number of others that are not even, you know, coming to my head right now. He wants it. You're going to get a motivated guy. And if you can get him at $7.5 million, and if the Sharks are willing to eat four, I'm just throwing that number out there. I think it does open it up to teams that have an understanding of maybe it's tight this year, but it's going to open a little bit after that. And you're within a 3-year window, so to, let's say, of Erik Karlsson at the top of his game. I know he's got 4 years left to try to win with him. I think there are teams out there that can make it happen. The question, though, is it a team like Buffalo, right? Is it a team like Detroit? Is it a team like Ottawa, where he came from? And would Karlsson say, that's a team I can go win a Stanley Cup with, even though they weren't playoff teams this year? But they're projecting out to look pretty good, and he would obviously be a huge addition. Or does it have to be a team, say, like Tampa Bay or Colorado or Vegas? You know, I don't know how any of those teams make it work, you know? And that's going to be a very interesting thing, how this all plays out. I do think he gets traded, but he might not get traded until the season starts, until after the season starts.
I just think the teams that you're talking about that have that kind of money are not the teams that he wants to play for. The reason that you have that kind of money is because you're no good.
Well, Buffalo is getting way better. We know that. You know, Ottawa's getting better. I don't think it's going to be Ottawa, but Ottawa's getting better. Detroit's getting better. Another team to look at is Florida, right? I mean, Florida just went to the Stanley Cup final, and they've got guys coming off their books, and they could, I mean, how much better would Florida have been in the Stanley Cup final had they had Erik Karlsson playing, a healthy Erik Karlsson playing for them? Do they beat Vegas? I don't know. But their power play was pretty awful in that Stanley Cup final. He'd make it a heck of a lot better.
And the other thing you just said was a very key word, a healthy Erik Karlsson playing in the Stanley Cup final. This is the first time in a long time Erik Karlsson's been healthy. Are you going to gamble $7.5 million if that's the number we're agreeing on? Are you going to gamble almost 10% of your salary cap on a dude that's had one healthy season in the last 6 years?
Well, it's a great question. It's also an interesting point for the Sharks too, right? I mean, the direction that they're going in, it makes absolutely no sense for them to have Erik Karlsson at $11.5 million on their cap for 4 years. So I wonder if they'd be willing to eat more than what we're talking about here just to get rid of it.
Why doesn't it make sense for them to have that on their cap?
Well, because they're trying to get younger. They're trying to, I would imagine they need to get younger, quicker, fast, you know, all those things. He's only getting older. He's still really good, okay?
But what's younger, quicker in this league? It's cheaper.
Cheaper, yeah.
So they need somebody help them.
But you could get somebody to help you that's younger and cheaper and still eat some of the salary, is my point. Karlsson.
But my point is they need that money that Karlsson, they're paying Karlsson.
Right.
Just like Arizona needs that money. Like, they need to get to the floor. Yeah. If they have a bunch of entry-level guys and John Gibson, they're not getting to the floor.
Anaheim, you mean? Yeah. Well, you're right.
I mean, San Jose, I'm sorry, not John Gibson. He's an NFL. If San Jose has all young guys on entry level and bridge contracts,
well,
how are they getting to the floor without his $11.5 million?
Well, they got Hurdle. They got Couture. They've got guys who are signed. So, we don't know where it's going to go. And Karlsson has made it very clear. And in talking to David Quinn about it, too, David Quinn was basically saying, look, I agree with him. I get it. I understand. I think everybody in San Jose understands. He signed there. He was traded there, and he signed there, and he said it on Sunday with the idea that the window was open, that the timeline was there, and it fit for what he wanted and that the Sharks needed and everything. And then they took a right turn, you know, and went a different direction. We'll see where it goes. I think he gets traded.
I don't buy the buyer's remorse. Why does he get a pass?
Well,
he made a mistake, and now he wants San Jose to pay for it.
He wants to be traded.
At a discounted rate, because that's the only way he's getting traded, because he's made it clear to everybody he doesn't want to play in San Jose. So if you're an opposing GM and you go to San Jose and you say, I'm only going to give you this. Your guy doesn't want to be here. That's a different deal than if you're like, you know what, I really love that player. I'm going to have to pry him out of San Jose. So let me throw this into the pot and make it a little sweeter. There's no sweetening in this pot. There's taking away assets and saying, I'm not giving you this. He doesn't want to be with you. He wants to be with me. You give me stuff to send them to me. He's put the franchise that he says he supports and everything else, he's painted him into a corner. And he signed the deal free and willing.
He did paint him into a corner. He did sign the deal. But he didn't sign it with the current GM. He didn't sign it with the current staff in place. So they could look at it and say, look, this wasn't our gamble. We need to just move on from this. And maybe that's the way they have to look at it. That's probably the way they have to look at it. It's a losing deal. It's a losing deal because they're also going to have to eat salary in it. It's a losing deal. It just is for the Sharks.
And if they're willing to do it, God bless them. But if they're not, why does Eric Karlsson get a pass?
He'll have to play there if they don't. I mean, that's just the way it goes. That's business, man. He'll have to play there if they don't. So that's an interesting one. And I think we touched on it briefly. Winnipeg's really interesting too, Sean. Connor Hellebuyck is a finalist for the Vezina Trophy. He's one of the best goalies in the league. And he could be traded, right? I mean, he could be moved. And I would think that there are a number of teams that would be lining up to get Connor Hellebuyck. The deal, though, I think he's got 1 year left on his deal. And with 1 year left on a deal, are you willing to acquire Connor Hellebuyck without an extension in place?
No.
Right.
But I don't know if a team is. Look, two of the Vezina finalists could get traded.
It's true.
Linus Ullmark sat here on Sunday and said, I don't know what the future holds. And then Montgomery sat right behind him and said, I believe I have two number one goalies, and I can survive if one of them gets moved.
Probably could. Probably could.
So
I would agree with that, you know?
Yeah, so nothing sacred. And that's unbelievable to me that two of the three supposed best goalies in the league could get traded. There's even been talk, and it's crazy talk, that the goalie here in Nashville could get traded because Askarov was so good in Milwaukee this year, and he's the goalie of the future. That's Nutter Butters because they're the best team. He's the best goalie in the league. I don't care what anybody says about the Vezina. You look at all the behind-the-scenes numbers and everything else. Right now, there's nobody in the league that compares to him.
Right. And look, we agree that Nashville wants to make a splash here at the draft in their own in their hometown. They want to do that. They don't want to do it by trading UC Saros. It doesn't make any sense because this doesn't look like a team or feel like a team that wants to go into a rebuild. It's a team, as we said at the top here before we talked to Adam, reset. You can't do that without a goalie. Without a proven goalie. You can't do it, right? And you got a guy, and he's not making, he's making good money, but it's not like he's not Eric Karlsson, 11.5, right? It doesn't make any sense. And I think Barry Trotz knows that. I'm fairly certain Barry Trotz knows that. They're not trading UC Saros here. They're building around him and Yossi and Forsberg and a few others.
By the way, I agree, but somebody might want to tell the Vegas Golden Knights, the Stanley Cup champion, that you can't win without a proven goalie.
Yeah, you can. Well, if you have their defense, you can. You know, if you have their defense and the way they played, you can. And Aiden Hill's going to get paid. You know, we know that. You're right. Vegas is what Vegas did with Aiden Hill doesn't benefit goaltenders in this league. It doesn't allow. It doesn't make teams say, "Oh, I want to go big on that goalie." It makes them say, I want to go big on the back end.
Yeah, and it's a two-goalie league now for every team. Yeah.
It is. Well, look, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's happening here in Nashville. And look, it's a party city, too, and the party's on. The NHL's front and center in it. We've been here since Saturday, and you can definitely feel the hype of it, Sean. The NHL Awards are in a few hours tonight, Monday night, right before we're recording this, and I do think Erik Karlsson will win the Norris Trophy. And everything we've said here about what Winnipeg could do, what Nashville could do, we mentioned Calgary, we mentioned a few others, all could change in the next 5 minutes. That's the nature of the draft season, right?
Yeah, it's silly season between the draft in the next couple of days with all the GMs being here and then July 1st, which is as tight as it's ever been. There's one day.
One day.
Dude, we're going to finish the draft. We're going to get on planes to go home. Everything's going to break loose then. Of course, we'll get off the plane and turn on our phones and there'll be 97 text messages. And then we're into free agency. This has never happened. The window's never been this tight. It's crazy.
It's crazy season. It's a big week here in Nashville. We're enjoying it. If you're here, I'm sure you're enjoying it. I know, Sean, you're enjoying it. Maybe a little too much?
No, man. Very responsible, but I always enjoy this city. I was here for the last draft 20 years ago.
Which might have been the best draft since, although Adam said 2015. That might have been the best one since this one.
Yeah. It was a great draft, and you know what made it even better? Is I conned my boss at the time to spend a week here afterwards to cover rookie camp.
It's a good con job by you. I don't think it's going to work this time. Anyway, we thank Adam Kimmelman for jumping on with us. Good insight on the draft. And for everyone listening out there, enjoy the awards, enjoy the draft, enjoy free agency, and enjoy the offseason.